Whoops. All right. Our last speaker today is Natalia Maisel, and she is going to talk about gay-related stress, relationship health, and relationship formalization among same-sex couples.
Hi, thanks very much. I'm getting over a little allergy thing, so I sound a little funny today, but it's not my normal voice. So today I'm going to be talking about gay-related stress, relationship health, and relationship formalization among same-sex couples, and this is work I've done with my collaborator, Adam Fingerhut. So as we've heard before from the talks earlier, that intimate relationships are really associated with well-being. Positive intimate relationships, having less conflict and things like that, are associated with better physical and mental health. And researchers have looked at a lot of predictors of positive relationships, including individual factors, personality factors like neuroticism, interaction and communication patterns, and then also external stressors like poverty or work stress. And what I'm interested today in talking about is how research on same-sex couples can also include another kind of stress or sort of gay-related minority stressors. And today I'll be asking, how do these factors affect couples? So gay-related stress, or it's also sometimes called minority stress, you may have heard that, is the idea that LGBT individuals might be vulnerable to additional stressors due to their stigmatized status within society. And this originally, the term minority stress came about looking at racial or ethnic minorities and now has been applied to LGBT individuals. So these things can include discrimination, prejudice, perceived stigma, also the stress of concealing one's sexual orientation, maybe also having propositions on the ballot now. So the effect of gay-related stress is, you know, negative on mental health, and we've seen in numerous studies LGBT individuals tend to report higher rates of depression and other mental health problems, higher suicide rate among LGBT teens, and it's been, you know, suggested it's this gay-related stress that might be leading to some of those negative outcomes. Also, there's been a little bit of work looking at how these stressors affect relationships. More perceived discrimination and internalized homophobia has been shown to be associated with less relationship satisfaction. Perceiving that one's relationship is marginalized is also associated with less commitment. And this is just a quote from one of these, from one of the qualitative studies. A woman who's in a same-sex relationship was saying, "So the members of my family that actually have knowledge of our relationship are not supportive of it, and I guess my assumption that if I were to share that information with others, like my parents, that the same disapproval is waiting in the wings, which I guess is why the hesitancy is there to do that. I don't know if that affects the way my partner perceives my commitment to her or not. I mean, the fact that we're obviously in a situation where I can't be open and upfront about it." So here's just one example of how sort of this, you know, the stress of maybe concealing one's sexual orientation might come in and impact the couple. So the first hypothesis is that gay-related stressors will be associated with poor relationship quality. It's one thing I'll be looking at today, and this is kind of, then we also know later on there could be other arrows that this poor relationship quality will have, you know, other effects on physical and mental health. Now there are probably lots of moderators of this association, and given the panel today, we'll be looking at relationship status. And in particular, for different sex couples, relationship status, from Paul's talk, as you saw, you know, it's a little bit clearer what relationship status means if you're married or not. And for different sex couples, relationship status predicts relationship outcomes and also individual health and well-being. For same-sex couples, as you saw from that one chart that he had, it's helpful for this talk. There's lots of different kinds, you know, civil unions, all these different things. We focused on domestic partnerships in California and focused specifically on California so that, you know, everyone would have the same sort of legal possibilities of registering for a domestic partnership. So we were interested in what are the effects of the domestic partnership, but then also what are the effects of just having had a ceremony or wedding, some kind of social recognition. So that's what we'll be asking the rest of this. So that's what I mean when I say relationship status. So did you have a domestic partnership? Is it registered with the state? And then separately, either, you know, if you did it, if you have both, that's fine too. We'll be talking about that later. But the second one is having had a ceremony or wedding. So first, the first hypothesis for this is that domestic partnership registration and or having a ceremony should be associated with greater relationship quality. and that having both should probably be the best situation, having had sort of this in front of, you know, family and friends, and then also having the legal benefits. And then finally, looking at relationship status as a buffer. And this is really from the stress buffering model, which is talked about a lot in public health, of course. And, you know, so the classic example might be something like social support buffers you in times of stress. You're experiencing a job loss, but you have lots of people to rely on, and so you don't experience the negative effects as strongly. And that similarly here is that we're suggesting that maybe relationship status might be sort of a peace of mind, a kind of a, you know, sense of security in the relationship. So when these gay-related stressors come in, you have something that makes you feel more secure in the relationship and might buffer some of this stress. That's the general model there. So for example, in one of the studies I'll be showing today, we asked people, you know, why did you get a domestic partnership? And people wrote things like, we wanted our bond to be official with the state and wanted to have insurance rights with each other's employers. We asked, why did you have a ceremony? And people wrote things like, we had been together for 3 years by that point and decided the social, religious, and family recognition was important to us. Family on both sides understood our relationship more after they attended our commitment service. And thanks to that participant for writing the exact thing we wanted them to. So. So then our third hypothesis was that domestic partnership registration and having a ceremony will buffer participants from the negative effects of gay-related stressors. So I'll just be talking about one study today that Adam and I conducted where we recruited people both from internet samples, you know, listservs and things like that, serving California. And then also we took a random subsample of the domestic partnership registry in California. All participants were in same-sex relationships. So it was over 200 participants there. As you can see, since we were, you know, collecting from the registry and things like that, participants were about 40 years on average. Average length of the relationship was 8.66 years, so they'd been in these relationships a long time. About 75% of the sample was white. And just to give you a sense of what people had done, we found that about 32% had only had the domestic partnership. About 9% had only done a ceremony. 24% had done both, and about 35% had done neither. Then we asked about gay-related stress. This was a sort of established measure. Asked about lots of different kinds of stress, family stress, discrimination, visibility are just some of the categories. We looked at relationship quality. We looked at relationship satisfaction, relationship commitment, and also investments, so how much people feel that they've invested in the relationship. So, for example, compared to other people I know, I've invested a great deal in my relationship. So to look at the first question, is gay-related stress associated with relationship quality? And we found that in general it was. People who experienced more gay-related stress also reported less satisfaction with the relationship. Also, they reported less commitment to the relationship. We didn't find an association with investments. And all of these analyses control for age, gender, and relationship length. Obviously, relationship length in particular is probably a big predictor of some of this stuff. So. Okay, and so then the second one is relationship status associated with relationship quality. So the DP, so for the findings for domestic partnership, we found actually the only thing it was associated with in our sample was investments in the relationship. It wasn't associated with satisfaction or commitment. And we found the opposite thing for having had the ceremony. It was associated with satisfaction and with commitment and not with investments. So it's kind of interesting. We weren't really predicting this specifically, but it sort of makes sense that maybe the more legal recognition part is associated with kind of the, okay, I feel invested, you know, got a lot at stake here in this relationship, and maybe the public ceremony is a little bit with some of these things like satisfaction. So it's kind of something interesting for future research. There was no interaction of having done both, though. All right, so then our question about does it act as a buffer? And we found that, interestingly, in this sample at least, it's still a pretty smallish sample to be looking for these kind of interactions, but there wasn't a moderation of domestic partnership registration, but there was for having had the ceremony for both the relationship satisfaction and the commitment. And I'll just show you what one of those looks like. So here we're looking at relationship commitment, so higher numbers, more commitment. And we have people who reported low gay-related stress, and we have people who reported high gay-related stress. And kind of the buffering part is right here. So these people are people who reported that they're under a lot of gay-related stress, whether it's, you know, discrimination or their family has been sort of rejecting. But they're not experiencing the hit in commitment that other people who did not have the ceremony are. So in this case, having had the ceremony seems to sort of buffer you a bit from that hit in relationship commitment that other people were taking. Does that make sense? Right. So just to look at some of the, so this is obviously cross-sectional. We'd love to be able to follow people over time and see how these all these things are associated. Also wasn't randomly selected from the whole population of same-sex couples. Some of the strengths are that it extends the stress buffering model to the experiences of same-sex couples, and it's sort of like the idea of using this, you know, these models that have been used a lot in other areas of research. And then also sheds light on the possible effects of pursuing these different legal and social formalization options. So some future directions, as I mentioned, to examine couples over time would be great. To examine why, sort of the, you know, why they choose different things, why people might choose a ceremony or getting, you know, this kind of recognition versus that. And then we conducted this study last year, and then in June, obviously, there was marriage, and so everything, you know, has changed since then. So it'd be really interesting now to get another sample and see what marriage looks like versus the domestic partnerships versus ceremony and all this stuff. One thing might be that maybe when people get married, they're more likely to have a ceremony. Maybe the two go sort of hand in hand more than a domestic partnership and a ceremony does. I don't know. It's all going to be interesting if it still stays after next week. So just want to thank my co-author Adam and Gary and the Williams Institute. Thanks.
All right. We are going to open up now for discussion, and people can, if you'll stand to give your question or your commentary and direct it to our panel, we can have a discussion. Yes, please.
Short answer to your question. I'm not sure what the balance would be, and the literature really isn't there. It hasn't been investigated. My general feeling is that for a lot of these, like the different mechanisms that have been proposed, it's going to be highly contextualized, and a lot of, say, a deficit in one area may be made up with strengths in a different area, or this balance may be changing over time, or in different locations, or at different points in the life course. So my short answer, I guess, is I'm not really sure, and the literature really hasn't investigated any sort of these differences in balances of recognition.
In terms of the couples, you raise actually a couple really interesting points. I don't actually know off the top of my head what the gaps were in, you know, between the two couples, for men and women, and then male couples, female couples, and different sex couples. I will say that a couple things, that one theory as to why you would find men making slightly less in same-sex couples than married men and women making more than married women is basically the Gary Becker model of what they call household specialization. So the idea in Becker's model is that there's increased efficiencies within a family when one person specializes more in market production and the other in home production. And that in heterosexual couples, because of childbearing and other things, that winds up happening that men tend to devote more in market and also sadly, in our society, men's market labor is actually valued at a higher rate than women's. So he'll tend to work more, women tend to work less. Well, if you're in a same-sex male couple, you might imagine that they're going to respond a little bit more like married women, which is to say that they'll know that they're going to have a male partner, and so they don't necessarily have to devote as much into the market as a married man, because their partner is having a high earning person, is another man and higher earning. So they can kind of balance that out. Whereas for lesbians, they're going to, in more ways, act like married men, because they're going to partner with a woman who will probably have less earnings than a man would. And so they're pushed to kind of devote more into the market. I'm not sure I completely buy any of that, but I think that I think it perhaps explains some of it. The other comment I'll just make on that is that another comment I often get is that, well, it could be that gay men and men in same-sex couples or lesbians both occupationally sort very differently, and they work in different kinds of occupations and industries, and that's true, they do. But when you control for those in models, it doesn't eliminate the differences. So it is true that happens, but it's not clear that has that much explanatory power as to why they either make more or less than others.
Yes, please.
To avoid, certainly at this point in time, to look a lot at health risks and mental health risks, because for whatever reason, I mean, you know, when you study LGBTs, either because they're more honest about reporting or because of minority stress, they often, you know, have more mental health issues in some studies. And so it wouldn't be surprising if you also find that among legalized couples. So I just avoid that topic for political reasons. But I don't know if other people have looked at that in the audience.
There was the one study someone referenced that among men there was an evidence of lower STIs.
That was Jeff Klausner in San Francisco who published that just recently. I think I would approach that kind of cautiously, because I think it's a trap of LGBT health that we think of this as sexual health, and we're much more than our sexual and reproductive domains. Although we have to follow the constraints of funding, and if you want to do your work, you have to get it funded somehow. So there may be a balance, but personally, I'd be less inclined to pursue strictly a sexual health research agenda.
It doesn't have to be strictly. I mean, you can just include it among your.
Sure. Options. And that would be interesting to look at as part of overall health, but definitely that has a place. Yeah.
But you know, that is exactly what the conservative right zeroed in on. So, for example, in our research, the only finding they put up on their website is that gay men are less monogamous. And we see that over and over and over again from our study, not all the other results, finding that same-sex couples have higher relationships.
Well, but you could also compare with same-sex, with men who have sex with men who are not in relationships, and then do the continuum, what are the outcomes, and it could actually be an argument.
The kind of funny thing about the non-monogamy thing is that even though gay men, there is some evidence in studies that they're less likely to, they have longer duration relationships.
I was wondering about that. Is that controlled for age? I mean,
yeah.
It's
one of the most, that finding goes way back to the 80s and the, what was the big, Pepper Schwartz and Bloomstein and Schwartz, which was one of the first serious studies to look at differences in couple types. And even back then, they found that men were in longer duration couples than female couples. And it's virtually most of this literature is in psychology. Virtually every study I know of finds that in their samples. It's pretty uncommon in studies to not find that. So,
I'm just curious,
Yes, please.
Does argue a little bit. So when you compare black same-sex couples to black married couples, the married ones do better raising kids. But the other quick comment I'll make to that point, and I think it's a very, very valid one. There's a book out now by Nancy Polakoff, who's a professor at American University, and she makes a pretty strong case that. And I have some differences with her, but she makes a pretty powerful case that precisely that it's just not all about marriage. That there's the bigger question is why are we attaching marriage to all these public policy advantages at all? Why do we bother to do that? There's lots of evidence in Europe and other places. There's no reason to do that, and marriage doesn't solve the problems completely. And given that marriage, for whatever reason, in our country, white privileged people are more likely to get married than everybody else. And so they're accessing that more often and to that end then they get disproportional benefits.
Other questions? We have time for another question. Well, if not, I'd like to thank the panelists and I'd like to thank the attendees for a really wonderful and really interesting session today. Thank you very much. I saw you out there. Hi. How is it going?
It's going well. Are you presenting any other time?
I am. Tomorrow morning I talk about violence. Street-level violence and the relationship of orientation and childhood abuse to participating in street-level violence, incarceration, and sex in prison. So, yeah, that's my presentation tomorrow. And then I moderate one more session Wednesday morning. Oh, actually, I'm talking this afternoon at the Spirit of 1848 celebration. I'm presenting for the LGBT caucus here about the history of the caucus and unmet needs and its future challenges. So that's this afternoon. It's the Spirit of 1848. We're having a celebration at 4 p.m. 16 caucuses will be presenting. We all have 4 minutes. So I'll be presenting. So,
but there's hope.
Yeah.
I talked to Randy before I left. I really don't think you should go. You really need to work on your dissertation. Look at this.
It's a few days, but then you really do have to work on your dissertation and finish up.
I know.
How close are you?
Well, it's really the proposal component.
Okay.
He wants me to propose.
It's fine. I mean, this is 5 days, so.
I have another comedy school in Miami.
You do. You owe it to yourself to push yourself through the system and get done.
I know.
Because once it's over, it's over.
Exactly.
And you can go on with your life and your career.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I hear.
Let me
give another love.
But you need to. I mean, you've got to have to release other sort of commitments and put it first.
Exactly.
Sometimes you have to.
I know
it's sort of tough love stuff, but it's important to
organize the schedule better.
Well, it's hard.
Yeah.
A lot of competing sort of, you know, prize for attention. But why are you here? Thank you. Yeah. Hey, Brandy, how are you? Isn't it good? Good. Good. I got a little more sleep. Some doing okay. They are. But it's early on yet. I still got 2 more days. So I'll be fine. I get confused, though, as to what day it is and where should I be doing a talk or something like that. Because I have one tomorrow morning. I have one this afternoon. And so then the Spirit of 1848 celebration is this afternoon on human rights. 4 o'clock. We each talk 4 minutes, and I'm talking for our caucus, giving a 4-minute presentation on the history of the caucus and the challenges. Well, truthfully, if that's your forte, I would do that. I mean, ours is good. It's all about human rights. Okay. Great.
Is it here in this
building? I'm not sure, to be honest. See if I can find it here.
Okay.
Spirit of 1848. Uh-huh. Celebration. It's in meeting room 8 CNF.
That should be fine.
No, it should be fine. It's in the other part of the building, but it's there.
Okay.
All right. So.
I look forward to it.
Thank you.
Brandy,
great job, Bob.
Oh, thank you.
Good to see you in action.
Yeah. It was fun to do. I'm glad to help out.
It was a good session.
Yeah.
I'm really putting it together. Because, you know, I bailed out at the last minute saying I'll moderate, but I don't have time to put it together.
Well, just everything, just trying to get it together at the last minute with the late breaker and stuff.
It would be really great. Thank you.
Thanks for, like, rushing down here.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
I feel better.
Gary, are you heading down?
I am right now.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You just came back.
Pleasure.
East Coast.
Yeah, I was on the East Coast yesterday. So.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks, and here's my...